This morning we hear the story of the so-called road to Emmaus from the Gospel according to Luke, the only place where we hear of this story. It's one of the richest stories in the Christian Testament, in my opinion, and it's actually become one of my favorite stories over time. We most often hear it read and preached immediately after Easter because the setting, if you'll take notice, the scene is set on the very same day, later on the very same day as that first Easter resurrection morning. And it's also one of the most detailed of the post-resurrection stories that we have, so we can tell that this story is important to the author of Luke. And it reflects a couple of concerns that were very important for the author throughout Luke. The importance of those who are on the margins and not in the middle, and the revelations that happen at shared meals. Those are common strands in the Gospel according to Luke. You know, in the other detailed post-resurrection experiences that we have in Scripture, they seem to have occurred mainly with the inner circle of disciples, or name the inner circle of disciples. But here we have a story of two disciples who were not in the, quote, in crowd. There's a man named Cleopas, who is not mentioned anywhere else, and an unnamed disciple. A disciple who, in many traditions, if you're not aware, in many traditions, this other disciple is pictured as one of the women followers. So in our minds, I'd invite us to picture both a man and a woman on the road to Emmaus. These two disciples are walking and talking, and somehow, mysteriously, Jesus, risen but unrecognizable to them, comes alongside and initiates a conversation by asking what it is they're talking about. And it stops them in their tracks, and they stand looking sad. What a poignant little sentence. They stood there looking sad. They are amazed that this stranger doesn't know what has just happened in Jerusalem. What things? Jesus asks. We know that he knows, but they don't know that he knows. So Cleopas responds with a summary of the events that have just transpired, and in many ways, if you read it, it is a condensation of a Christian confession. Next, the still unrecognized Jesus says that, well, all these things were supposed to happen, and then apparently recounts all of the places in Scripture that had been fulfilled. Now, unfortunately for us, Luke does not include those helpful little details. By the time they reach that point of the conversation, the day has drawn late, the disciples invite Jesus, still unrecognizable to them, invite him to stay with them. And when they're at the table, ready to eat, Jesus does something that may sound familiar to those of us who have been in church. Takes bread, blesses it, breaks it, and gives it to them. Aha. Suddenly, they see this is Jesus. And just as suddenly, Jesus apparently disappears. And now, excited to share what happened to them, they return that very evening to Jerusalem, that very night, to tell the other disciples. It is a story that's full of soulful details. I think I love this for one reason, because it seems so similar to my spiritual journey and our spiritual journeys. Aren't they very similar to those disciples on the road to Emmaus? We often go unnoticed, not part of the in crowd. We go about our daily lives, wandering on our way or going urgently to some destination, and then unbidden, somehow an unrecognized holy presence comes alongside, and then suddenly we get an exhilarating glimpse of what it is, and then it slips away just as quickly as it came. It leaves us wanting more, and it leaves us forever changed. I also love it because it rings true to the spiritual life I've experienced seeking to be a follower of Jesus. At least two ways it rings true for me. First, we encounter that presence, quote, along the way. We encounter the presence along the way. And second, we encounter the presence at the table. Isn't it so often in our lives, in our spiritual lives as well, that we somehow believe it will all begin when we reach a certain destination? That we reach a certain destination and then it will all begin, it will be revealed to us. It's somewhere out there, somewhere yet to be a place that we've arrived, when it actually begins along the way. It has already begun. A reminder that it's the journey, not the destination, that counts. And one of the intriguing details about this story is, unlike a lot of the ancient cities and towns mentioned in Scripture, biblical scholars can't quite locate where Emmaus was. Either Luke named a village Emmaus that was known by another name, whether it was a tiny village that is now lost to history, or whether it was a village that existed at all as a physical place or somehow concealed. The fact that Emmaus as a village is elusive reinforces the message that it really isn't the destination that mattered. It was the road to Emmaus along the way, which is where it all began. You know, several months ago, I began an addition to my Sunday morning prayer practice. I will tell you, clergy often struggle to have structured spiritual prayer practices just like everybody else. We're not so different than you all. But I will say one of the things that I do very regularly is I have a very structured prayer practice on Sunday mornings. In addition to praying about the sermon, some Sundays that needs more prayer than others, I have a very structured prayer and meditation time that I go through on early on Sunday morning. But a few months ago, I added something to it, which sounds so simple, I'm sure every clergy person and every pastor has figured it out long before I ever did. But I began praying for our Sunday worship service that was on its way, not just for my sermon preparation, but praying for the musicians, praying for the ushers and greeters, praying for the readers, praying for everyone that had a role and everyone that was on their way. Now, I have no idea if anyone ever felt those prayers or if it made any difference to anyone else, but it changed me. Worship already began for me in my prayer time. It started along the way. It wasn't just the destination. It makes me curious what would happen if we all began praying before we got here, if we all knew that it began on the way. One of the other things that I love about this story of the road to Emmaus is that it was apparently the inspiration for the grand tradition of Easter parades. Isn't that surprising? I know, has anyone here ever been in an Easter parade? I didn't until I came to MCC. We had Easter bonnet contests in Los Angeles. Yes! But the Easter parade tradition that in finery and grand and outrageous hats, one wanders and or marches through the streets or the sidewalks, a showing off of the finery for your Easter glory. Apparently, the tradition began in the early Middle Ages, if not before, that after Easter morning worship, people would leave worship and intentionally walk along the roads and the byways of their country, city, or town, expecting somehow, as at Emmaus, on the road, they would meet the risen Christ on the way. The practice of intentionally walking on Easter afternoon was the spiritual intention that not only did it happen back then, but it could happen this Easter as well. Any Easter, any day. I don't know about you, but when I'm in a parade, I always feel a little awkward. Perhaps it is because I'm an introvert, but there's a real self-consciousness when you know you're in a parade. I worry about how I look. I worry about what other people are thinking of me. Am I sweating too much? I am not very open to paying attention to who is walking alongside me if I'm in a parade. I am even less likely to notice that it might be Christ right alongside me. Along the way and at the table, we should probably pretty easily recognize communion that is hidden in this story, barely hidden in this story. In fact, it is the twofold structure of all of historic Christian worship that this story reflects. An exposition of scripture and shared cup and bread of communion. That's the pattern of Christian worship across the centuries. And Luke shared this story not just to tell one more post-resurrection appearance of Jesus to build a case. Luke's audience, as we're invited to do, should hear and see more. They would have recognized their own community, their own experience, their own struggle in this story. Written probably 40 years after the event it describes, just like John's story of Thomas that we heard last week, this story addressed anxieties in the early Christian movement. We didn't get to meet Jesus when he was around. Is it possible to really know him? And how do we know that this Jesus is still with us? Luke's answer: even if we can't see or touch Jesus, when we share the stories of our ancestors in faith, when we share the meal of remembrance at the table, Jesus is really, really here. The story about how Jesus showed up to, dare we call them, minor disciples in the past, illustrated for them that a living, a holy encounter wasn't just confined to remembered famous people somewhere in the distant past. What they did in the here and now, in the present, continued to be the very means of having that same transformative meeting with the risen Christ. And that transformation happens in the simplest ways: talking and sharing a meal. Along the way and at the table. At the breaking of bread, their eyes were opened. I very recently had what I will call a minor epiphany around communion. And it happened, well, as you might know if you've been here for a few years, on Holy Thursday, for the last few years, we have found different ways to honor the connections of the Last Supper of Jesus, which we recall at the communion table, the Last Supper, and its connections with the Jewish Passover Seder. In 3 out of the 4 Gospels, the Last Supper was described as the Passover meal. In John, it is not described as the Passover, but before the Passover. But we've explored those connections for the last few years. And this year, the next time I stood at the communion table at Elevation, I realized something. In observing, the more I study, and even with a limited experience of Seders with which I have had, the Seder is a celebration. It's a recounting of the liberation story of the ancient Hebrews from slavery in Egypt. There are 4 cups of wine that are drunk during the course of the meal. There are songs that are sung. There are questions that are asked and answered. A Seder tends to be a rather joyful and jovial affair. While there is the telling of a hard story, it ends with freedom and liberation, which is why it is bathed in celebration. And it has occurred to me, in contrast, our story of the Last Supper, the final meal of Jesus, is remembered in the shadow of a sacrifice, a suffering, and a death, and it sometimes feels much less celebratory than the Seder. And it occurred to me, what if we intentionally celebrated this as a meal of liberation? God's deliverance into liberation, into new life. It's interesting to notice that many of the post-resurrection appearances, which we'll hear in the next few weeks, there'll be a couple more coming, many of them happen at meals, happen at tables or at meals. The meal that we hear today with the first two disciples on the evening of that first Easter day was the first meal of the resurrection. The meal we hear described in Emmaus was the first meal of the resurrection. The Last Supper was on Thursday, the First Supper was on Sunday. If this is a meal of liberation, while we recall the words of the Last Supper each and every time we come, it can be the first supper of the rest of our lives. Has anyone here ever needed to start over? I'm not asking for a show of hands, but they're going up around the room. I'll put mine up too. Anyone ever need to start over? Anyone ever need to begin something again? From people who've been in 12-step programs to something as easy as being on a diet and then, dare we say, cheating or failing at the meal that you've just had. Do you feel that it's time to give up? Or do you feel that it's time to start over? Your last relationship failed. I'll never have another one. Do you give up or do you start over? Give up or start over. When these disciples began their walk on the way to Emmaus, what they had was a sad story to tell about a failed Messiah with a final meal before a tragic and crushing death and a strange and confusing rumor that somehow the tomb was empty. That's the story they had when they started on the road to Emmaus. Along the way, at the breaking of bread, they got a new story to tell. It became the first meal of the rest of their lives. Anyone here want a new story to tell in their life? Anyone here ever want to start over? Maybe you want to start over right now. Every time you come, and we do it every week, twice a week, Thursday and Sunday morning, start over. It gets to be the first meal of the rest of your life. A new opportunity that's known in broken bread. It's not just remembering something that's dead and gone, but living into new life, resurrection. It's not only the presence of a risen Christ, but it's a whole new world that is broken open. It's no longer just Last Supper, but it can be the First Supper of the rest of your life.